Well, it's hard to imagine a president more mob connected than President Kennedy, but the claim of by Don Folsom in the book Nixon's Darkest Secrets is, in fact, Richard Nixon should get the title for America's most mob connected president. What implications does that have for history? We'll get to that coming up in just a second. Your questions for Don Folsom as well, but we'll pick up on that. On the exact theme about the mobbed up presidency, what might that tell us more about the assassination of JFK? And where is he on these theories that Nixon was in the loop on that? Back to that next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. And Don Folsom, as a UPI reporter, I think you'd be interested in this. I'd just be curious to see what your response is that there's a famous UPI photo of Richard Nixon reacting to the news that JFK had been assassinated. It's a photo that was taken after he got off of the plane in New York, the day of JFK's assassination. And he was confronted by reporters and about this, and he gave his response, and it's appropriately, sad and expresses condolences. But what's interesting about that is that the plane had come from Dallas the day of the JFK assassination, and that there are quotes in Dallas newspapers as he was meeting with PepsiCo people, I believe. He was there on like a PepsiCo junket as a private citizen. And he was in Dallas then just before the assassination. Jim Mars, who's a friend of the show and a guy whose stuff I love reading. He's always made the connection that Richard Nixon was sort of taunting Kennedy by talking about the fact that he could travel anywhere and he didn't need Secret Service protection, but Kennedy did because of his unpopular policies. And that might have led to Kennedy's refusal to put the protective bubble on the Lincoln Continental, the bulletproof bubble. So I don't know whether all of that's true, but I'd be curious to see what you might have uncovered along the years of looking into Nixon that might have linked him to the JFK assassination, should such a link exist.
Sure. He was in Dallas that day. He left before President Kennedy arrived. He had been attending a Pepsi-Cola conference. He was the chief lawyer for Pepsi-Cola, good friend of Don Kendall, who was the president of Pepsi. And he actually returned, and you're right about the UPI photo showing him at Idlewild or LaGuardia, I
Yeah, well,
believe.
it'd be Idlewild before it became JFK, right?
Yeah, that's right. And looking very despondent and so on. But there are also stories that he told later that he did not learn about the Kennedy assassination until he was driving into town and a woman came running out of her house and stopped his cab and told him Kennedy's been killed and so on, which is, and there were two or three other incidents along the way of his taxi cab ride into town, and he told different stories over many years, and he also lied about his being in Dallas to the FBI when they questioned him about it only months later. And the reason they brought it up to him was that Marina Oswald, the wife of Lee Harvey Oswald, said that during a previous Nixon trip to Dallas, that Oswald had thought of killing Nixon. But he told the FBI that the l last time that he was in Dallas was on November 20th, 1963, but he was actually there until the 22nd. And one other thing that could put him in a position to have more knowledge about the Kennedy assassination than we generally think is that several other of his future Watergate burglars were also spotted in Dallas that day. I'm talking about Howard Hunt and Howard Hunt's shadow, Bernard Barker, and a man named Frank Sturgis. These were all people who were arrested for the Watergate burglary many years later. And Hunt, on his deathbed, confessed that he was part of a plot to
Right.
Assassinate Kennedy, but that he was only a bench warmer. that he didn't actually participate in the assassination.
Well, in the tape, which we actually broke here on the show, he said that he chose not to participate. He didn't want to. He sort of volunteered, you know, consultancy, but he didn't want to be a part of it. Cord Meyer, he identified Cord Meyer, a former CIA guy, and linked to JFK through his ex-wife, Mary Meyer. But he identified Cord Meyer and then Frank Sturgis. But Sturgis then comes back to the Cuban connection, because even though he's got a German name, Frank Sturgis was Cuban, wasn't he?
No, he was actually 100% Italian.
Oh, Italian, that's
but
what it was.
He did speak enough, his Italian was good enough to get him to be able to talk with the other Cubans in Spanish and understand them.
Okay, because this goes back to the Bay of Pigs thing.
That's right. These all, right. All of these people were involved also in the Bay of Pigs. And
that's
a lot of people don't know that Nixon was the father of the Bay of Pigs.
Explain that. What do you mean by that?
Well, during his vice presidency, he was the man in charge of the Bay of Pigs invasion plans that didn't come off until after Kennedy took over. But he had there was a second part of the plan, the Bay of Pigs plan, that also Kennedy took onto his own, and that was the murder of Castro.
I know that I've got more questions, but I'm going to leave a couple people hanging, and I don't want to do that. Let me ask, back in the studio, who's on the first-time caller line? I see that line blinking. David is hanging on first-time caller line for Don Folsom, author of Nixon's Darkest Hours. Go ahead, David.
Yes, good evening, Ian. Firstly, let me say I've been listening to Coast to Coast since the late 90s. It's the best program on the radio.
Glad to have you.
Two questions, very briefly. One, the segue you just gave me is terrific. My question is regarding the view and theory propounded in the Family of Secrets book regarding the CIA perhaps wanting to bring Richard Nixon down, and the whole Watergate burglary, et cetera, being a part of that, John Dean playing into it, et cetera, and George H.W. Bush also being in Dallas the same day as Richard Nixon was in Dallas and JFK was shot. That's my first question. Have you explored that theory? What do you think about it? Second part
okay,
is...
Stop right there. Let's get an answer to that before you go on to the second one. Go ahead. Just stay on the line. Go ahead, Don.
Yes, I don't know that any of that is true. I don't know for sure that George Bush was in Dallas that day, for example, although there are some photographs that people claim show George Bush. And there is some evidence that he was a CIA agent, Bush, back at that time.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I just don't know enough about it.
Okay, and the other thing remarkable about that is, at least the view propounded in that particular book was that he denies remembering where he was that day. I was in sixth grade. I remember where I was.
I do too.
You know.
Okay. Right, or at least he had conflicting memories of where he was, which is also, again, sort of that pattern with the Nixon testimony on that. David is on a Skype line listening internationally in Israel on Coast to Coast. David, you're talking with Don Folsom.
Hi, can you hear me?
Barely, so let's get right to your question.
Okay. Actually, I just wanted to make a comment about Nixon and...
I think we're going to lose you. Yep, I'm afraid we're going to lose you, and I'm sorry for having you wait that long and then missing that opportunity, perhaps on another line. Rod is in Hermosa Beach, California, on Coast to Coast. Rod?
Ian Pollard with a voice for print and a face for radio. Always fun listening to your show. Got a question here for Don Folsom. Here on the Coast to Coast show, a very, very oft-discussed incident with Richard Nixon has to do with a trip that he allegedly took to Homestead Air Force with Jackie Gleason, at which point he was viewing some alien artifacts. So the question for Don is, number one, do you have any evidence at all that Nixon was aware of the Majestic 12 organization? And number two, have you ever heard that anecdote about Jackie Gleason going with him to Homestead Air Force Base, and can you comment on that?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, I don't know about either one, I'm sorry to say, but he was a golfing partner on occasion of Jackie Gleason, and he was a big fan of his. I think they had a mutual admiration society, but whether he went to Homestead and viewed what you say, I have no idea.
Why Jackie Gleason? Yeah, I mean, what was his attraction to Nixon? But you said Mutual Admiration Society. Were you around for their interactions?
I think that I only know that he was very fond of Jackie Gleason as a, you know, an entertainer.
Right.
And that both men were on the same band politically. But I have never met Jackie Gleason and have never seen Nixon and Gleason together.
Well, that's kind of what I was curious. It wasn't so much. I could see why Nixon would be interested in Gleason. I just, you know, I would think it didn't seem like Richard Nixon was a very funny guy.
No, he had no sense of humor at all. As a matter of fact, he tried on occasion to be funny. For example, the David Frost line that I like so much. He was no good at small talk, and he once asked David Frost during a break in their taping, have you done any fornicating this weekend? Things like that that were just off the wall. And he used to ask his Secret Service agents when he had nothing better to say to them the same thing. Did you do any fornicating this weekend?
That's so weird.
It is weird.
That is such a weird thing to say.
I know. And one time I remember when he, in a motorcade in Florida, one of the motorcycle officers was injured. He ran into another car and was lying on the ground in pain, and his aides told Nixon to get out and say something to the man. He went over to the guy writhing in pain and said, how do you like the work?
Okay. Wow. All right. Dell is in either West Los Angeles or West Louisiana. I don't know. It just says West L.A.
Yeah,
hey, Dell?
Yeah, I'm okay. In West L.A.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Don, you know, I lived in San Clemente, and I was there when Nixon resigned. And I saw Bebe Rebozo, and I tell you, Nixon changed completely. He you know all those mafia figures came in there with these big Lincolns. You know,
yeah.
and he lived in this, you know, in the compound, you know. He,
that's
he
right.
Lived in the compound and at the state park, and I was over on Calafia, north of the state park, you know, that went, you know, went right down in front of the state park.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, boy, I was a contractor over there, and I was always running around there, and to see those big Lincolns, there were a lot of Lincolns, you know, and a lot of those mafia figures over there. Did you ever get a chance to get over there and see all that stuff?
Well, I did. It was whenever he had a press conference or whenever the press secretary would allow us to get that close to him on the grounds of the estate there at San Clemente. It was very beautiful, and it cost the taxpayers in improvements to his property about $2 million, just as an aside. The first post-resignation, the first time he went out of the grounds was to play golf with a lot of mobsters at the mob-owned country club. I forget the name of it. That's somewhere close to San Clemente, or maybe it was in San Diego. But that got the interest of the Watergate grand jury back in Washington, because he had said he was too ill to testify to the grand jury. That got them interested, and they flew out there.
Wasn't it phlebitis? He said he had phlebitis. Did he say he had phlebitis at the time? Is that
yes,
what it was?
That's exactly right.
And here he is out playing golf.
That's right. He was out playing golf with people like Frank Fitzsimmons of the Teamsters Union, Alan Dorfman, who was a mafia man, several other, Jackie Presser, who was a former Teamsters boss. He was playing golf with these people. And so the Watergate special prosecutor decided it's time to take his testimony. And by the way, that was just released, his finally, after all these years, the testimony he gave in 1975 to the Watergate grand jury. There wasn't too much news in it because he filibustered for most of the time and criticized the prosecutors for going after him with unfair questions for most of the time.
Okay, we're talking with Don Folsom, author of Nixon's Darkest Hour, or sorry, Nixon's Darkest Secrets. We'll get a couple of the questions here, but I do have a question about the JFK thing I want to get back to in just a second. Ernest is in Huntsville, Alabama on Coast to Coast. Ernest?
How you doing tonight?
Doing all right. Go ahead.
Hi, Ernest.
I'm going good. I want to tell you what. One thing I do want to say is anytime I'm out of town or in the hospital or something, I cannot sleep unless Coast to Coast is on. And I don't have a radio usually when I'm good. In that place.
Well, you know, we can always be found on a smartphone and other things, too. So.
And I want to tell you what. I'm a first-time caller, but, you know, I couldn't get in on any other line except this one.
Glad to have you. Go ahead.
Question I did want to ask, I wanted to ask two questions and I'll hang up and listen for the answer, was any other president besides Nixon homosexual? And if Nixon was homosexual, you know, he hid it very well, you know, and that's all I've got to say.
Okay, well, it's an interesting question. Any other, you know, actually even broaden that up. I mean, we know about Bill Clinton's extramarital activity. Did you see anything else other than Clinton as you were covering the White House, or know of any other?
No, that's a good question. There's some speculation among some historians that James Buchanan may have been gay,
yeah.
But that's the only other president who may have that I know of.
There's a claim about Abraham Lincoln.
Well, yes, that he slept with somebody when he was
seems
a teenager
pretty
or something.
Tenuous. Well, no, that he traveled with the guy. As adults, but that was more common at the time that you would, because
yes.
That wasn't considered. But there was some note that he sent the guy or something. Outside of that, though, you have no other. You didn't see anything else from any of the other presidents that you covered either that made you think, like, oh, they are having an affair, or the White House core was, you know, tittering about Gerald Ford or anybody else.
Oh, no, right? No.
Okay.
Hand-holding incidents
with them.
Jerry Ford or Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton, certainly.
First-time caller line, Ambrose is in Burbank on Coast to Coast for Don Folsom. Go ahead, Ambrose.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, Ambrose.
Hi. The question, or I don't know really question, but my grandfather grew up with Richard Nixon and Yorba Linda way, way back in the day. And it didn't seem like any of this. I mean, yeah, he wasn't the best president in the world. He was kind of crappy. But homosexual speculation and stuff, I don't know. I kind of want to know where you're getting some of this stuff. Like, I'm not doubting any of it, but I'm just wondering how, like, where would you get your information and how would you know these kinds of things?
Well, there was a woman from Time magazine, a reporter, who saw them holding hands after a few drinks and a dinner out.
This is Bebe Rebozo. You're talking
about. With Bebe Rebozo. And several other hand-holding incidents have been reported by Anthony Summers. And he did spend much more time with Rebozo than he did with his family, and certainly with his wife, Pat. They did not have a very happy marriage. In fact, she was thinking of divorcing him after the loss in California. She didn't want any more of politics. And there are even some stories that he was so indifferent to her that it was just such a sham of a marriage. And there are even reports that he physically, as well as emotionally, was very unkind to her. There are three incidents reported by both Anthony Summers and by several Secret Service agents and by one Nixon aide, John Sears, that he was physically abusive to her at least three times, and one of those times she had to be sent to the hospital for severe facial injuries.
We're going to have to leave that there for now, but it's another report by a Nixon aide that brings us back to the JFK assassination question next on Coast to Coast. Stevie Wonder was on the Grammys broadcast tonight. He introduced Paul McCartney, and Paul McCartney came out, Sir Paul McCartney, sorry, came out and sang his new song about Valentine's Day. I rather liked it. I saw on some of the social media he was getting killed for it, but I thought it was good. But, you know, it's Paul McCartney, so I always cut him a little bit of a break. Don Folsom is a UPI, former UPI reporter, White House reporter, following Nixon and other presidents, wrote the new book, Nixon's Darkest Secrets. And I want to get back to this question about the JFK assassination. We talked about it earlier. What questions do you have? We'll get to yours next, too, on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. We'll get to our last questions for Don Folsom, Nixon's Darkest Secrets, coming up in just a minute. But let me go back to that link between the Bay of Pigs, JFK, and the assassination, and Richard Nixon. Because if you are correct in saying that Richard Nixon was the architect of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which we know was perhaps fatally flawed from the very beginning, or could only have worked if there had been sort of massive U.S. military support for this clandestine operation. Does that explain what seems like an obsession during the Watergate investigation that somehow he, Richard Nixon, was going to be linked to the Bay of Pigs? Isn't he on record to Halderman and Ehrlichman, two of his closest aides, that somehow investigating Watergate was going to lead back to the Bay of Pigs?
You're exactly right. In fact, he tried to get the CIA to stop the FBI's investigation of the Watergate break-in because it would lead back, according to Nixon, to the Bay of Pigs. So just what he was talking about there, it could have been coded talk between CIA and Nixon. As a matter of fact, Haldeman later wrote in a book that he believed it was CIA-Nixon code, the Bay of Pigs, for the Kennedy assassination.
I'm intrigued by this because I've heard this theory that Haldeman got the impression that when Nixon was talking about this is going to open the scab up or whatever it is, and it's going to go back to it's going to lead me back to the Bay of Pigs.
That's right.
Makes you wonder, what was he worried about, that he would be A, connected to the Bay of Pigs, or B, that he would be connected to the JFK assassination?
Could be either one. I can't quite get a handle on that, but I think he knew secrets about the JFK assassination that other politicians or other people did not know. And I think that he tried very hard to get the Bay of Pigs files from the CIA. Maybe he was talking about actually the Kennedy assassination files or something. But there is good news for all JFK assassination buffs, and that is that in 2017, not too many years from now, the CIA is supposed to finally release its full JFK documents, and there are about a million of them. So maybe we'll
unredacted
learn more just a few years from now.
Unredacted?
Well, it'll be redacted, but maybe we can read, read enough that's not
right,
redacted, to figure out what was what the Bay of Pigs was all about and why they used this code, if it was code, and
right. So
on and so forth. It's an intriguing mystery that I hope we have the answer to soon.
Well, you know, the devil is always in the details that are blocked out.
That's right.
You can only get so much if they're going to heavily redact those files. Well, but then real quickly back to the JFK thing. Oliver Stone, in the Richard Nixon biopic that he did, showed him having a meeting, I believe, with, you know, sort of historical henchmen, undefined people that were power brokers that seemed to be behind the JFK assassination, in a similar scene as he showed Lyndon Johnson being involved with people in the JFK movie. It's virtually, I think, if I, as memory serves, it's kind of like the same scene with two different presidents. Any thought on whether or not, in what you know about him, even if you don't know something specific about that, on whether or not Nixon had that kind of power, or that he would have been the kind of guy that those people that could have been power brokers for an assassination would have wanted to put into the White House? Why him? Why would he have been the guy that they would have wanted in the wake a few years after the JFK assassination?
Why would they have wanted?
Yeah, Richard Nixon. Why? What was it about Nixon that they would have said, you're our guy? If JFK goes down, you're the guy we're going to want to run coming up.
Well, I don't know. Are you talking about mafia or?
I don't know. That's the question. I mean, the, in the Oliver Stone movie, it seems to be some people that are behind this.
About oil interests, maybe businessmen.
I thought the defense contract business.
Yeah, I've never been able to pin down whether that is an accurate scene in that movie, because I think it's based on something that a researcher in Dallas dug up. That he believes there was a meeting of Johnson and Nixon and oil men and Hoover all in Dallas just before the assassination, and that they agreed they were in on the plan. But I've talked with the Gary, I can't think of his last name, Shaw, Gary, he's head of that sixth floor museum down there, and he claims that none of this is true. Nixon was at a theater that night. Johnson was in Houston. Hoover was in Washington, and so on and so forth. So I've never gotten a handle on that, but I do think that Nixon certainly did know some secrets about the assassination that he never did let on.
Ted, I wonder if it's mob secrets, and that goes back to his mob connectedness. West of the Rockies, Ted is in West Hollywood on Coast to Coast. Ted?
Hi, Ian and Don.
Hi, Ted.
Yes, I had a couple of points that are relative to what you've been talking about. When I first heard Ian introduce this and say that it was hard to find a president more mobbed up than JFK, first of all, he, of course, appointed Bobby Kennedy to head the Justice Department, and resulted in the biggest crackdown that has ever happened against organized crime. And I don't think you would have found JFK playing golf with a bunch of mob types.
Well, I don't know about that. In fact, what's interesting, I mean, I'll back up my statement if you want me to, which is that we have clear evidence. I mean, I think clear historical evidence that it was the mob that rigged certain victories in certain places in connection with the labor unions for Kennedy. It also explains why the mob felt so betrayed by the Kennedy administration when they decided to go after the mob with the appointment of Bobby Kennedy and the announcement of his agenda.
It's true, but that was more the doing of his father, who was very mob connected.
And okay, and your point?
Kennedy went totally against all of that. And let me, the last piece of this that I want to add is that Ralph Salerno, the expert on organized crime in New York, served with the House Assassination Committee, and which lent a lot of the emphasis at the end to organized crime playing a role in the hit. And he had a very famous quote, which went this way: organized crime will someday put a man in the White House, and he won't even know it till they hand him the bill.
And I was, that's a great quote.
He was talking more about Nixon than JFK. Let's just look at what happened.
So we'll disagree on JFK. I think that he would not have been president had it not been for the mob. And I don't know how much more connectedness you could want. If it hadn't been for the mob connections of both his father and his friends, he would never have been president of the United States. It was the deciding factor in his victory, the fact that he decided not to pay the bill may be a credit to his integrity, but that still makes him very mob connected, or he never would have been president. But your thoughts on that, Don?
Yes, I think I tend to agree with that. He also, Kennedy was very close to the mob dubbed Frank Sinatra.
Sure.
But that didn't last too long, and Sinatra was eventually wooed by Nixon and became one of Nixon's and Agnew's frequent companions. In fact, Frank Sinatra came out of retirement in 1973 to sing at a White House dinner for Nixon and for the Prime Minister of Italy. So, Nixon did everything he could to get Sinatra to endorse him, and he succeeded, and I guess there lies another tale.
Well, and while perhaps Kennedy didn't go golfing with mobsters, he didn't have a problem sleeping with their girlfriends.
That's right. He was fixed up by Sam Giancana with Judith Campbell Exner, and perhaps Marilyn Monroe and several right. others.
And who knows what information was flowing back and forth between those gun malls. Let's go to Ed, who's in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Don Folsom. Ed?
Oh, hi, Ian. Hi, Don.
Great hi. Show.
Real quick, you were talking about Nixon's humor before. There was a, it wasn't David Fry, but it was another great impressionist that did voices, that had facial expressions. During the Nixon era, and he told a story on Johnny Carson. He appeared on the show quite a number of times. And one time, he told us, relayed the story. He had the opportunity to meet Nixon face to face at a banquet or some kind of fundraiser.
I think it was in San Clemente, out by the pool.
You might have heard about this. Anyhow, he decided to be a hoot to talk to Nixon in his own voice, in his own facial expression.
Right.
So he had him right down to a T. And he started talking to Nixon that way, and Nixon turned to one of his aides and says, "Why is that young man talking so strange?"
I know.
Is that a true story?
That is a true story.
Was Nixon joking? Tell me Nixon's joking when he says that.
No, he's not.
I'm glad you heard about that. I won't hold you up anymore. You have other calls.
Thanks I love that, though.
Yeah.
I love that, though. Now, who was the impressionist?
You know, I think it was Rich Little or maybe a guy, I think it was Rich Little.
Okay. He did a pretty good Nixon. Mark is in South Florida, first time caller line on Coast to Coast for Don Folsom, author of Nixon's Darkest Secrets. Mark?
Hi, how are you guys?
Hi.
Good, all right, go ahead.
I was wondering if there was any connection between B.B. Rebozo and Nixon with B.B. Rebozo and there's the Florida banking connections with the possible laundering of money and couriering of money outside the United States.
Yes, absolutely. The B.B. Rebozo Bank on Key Biscayne reputedly laundered a lot of mob money, and most of it was from the Resorts International Casino in Paradise Island in the Bahamas. And I've talked to a man who said he used the Resort International yacht to ferry large amounts of gold cash in huge denominations in large duffel bags and drop them off at Rebozo's dock. And therefore, from there, it went into the bank and got washed.
Hmm. Was it, I'm obviously mob money, but was it drug money? And
no,
part of
it
the,
was skim from the...
from the casinos.
Yeah, from the casinos.
The VIG.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. Because I wonder, I mean, that being South Florida, and that also being the time of the, you know, the explosion of the so-called drug war, while all of this money was being spent to stop the flow of drugs in the United States, the drugs just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
And I,
you know, there had to have been, you know, some people involved that were both making that happen within that administration, I think, along with all of the other administrations along the way. Well, we just have a few more minutes with Don Folsom. You can link up to him through coast to coast nixonreview.com. Also, please feel free to keep in touch between now and next month, the second Sunday of March, when we'll chat again on Coast to Coast, and sign up for the Deacon Punnett account at Twitter. So DeaconPunnett. We'd love to keep in touch with you till then. Let's, in the meantime, grab, I think we have time for two last second questions, as long as we keep them quick. John is in Long Beach on Coast to Coast. John?
Thanks. Real quick, Gina is from the same state I am. I've mentioned, I'm from West Virginia, and I was a kid when Kennedy won the West Virginia primary and showed that a Protestant could win, I mean, a Catholic could win in a Protestant state, remaking of the president, how important that was. And the lore in West Virginia is that Joe Kennedy and all of his Boston war dealers came down and bought off all the sheriffs, many of the enough sheriffs who counted the votes in West Virginia. And those guys weren't mopped up, but in a sense they were. The Kennedy campaign might go down in history as one of the dirtiest ever run. So, I mean, I think this guy, maybe even if it wasn't the mob, maybe he did somebody else wrong. In other words, it was a pretty dirty campaign, we find out now, you know, about all the way through. So, I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, the West Virginia story is pretty accurate as far as I'm concerned.
It's a very corrupt political state, at least it was at that time.
Yeah, and they did have mobsters from out of town paying people to vote and so on and so forth. So I think Kennedy, through his father, was quite mobbed up for quite a while himself.
Barbara is in Waterford, California, and then that's going to do it on Coast to Coast. Barbara?
Yes. I have a question. On some old wallpaper that I have, I found the name Richard Nixon and John and the last name C-A-B-A-O-T. Have you heard of that name?
John Cabot?
Yeah.
It was on wallpaper, meaning what?
It was in my house is old, and it was behind some paneling.
And the name is what? Cabot?
Yeah.
Well, he did run with Henry Cabot Lodge 1 year.
Yeah, that's
maybe that's
lodge,
what it is.
Paper.
Okay.
So what did that mean, Lodge? Is that a name?
Yeah, Henry Cabot Lodge was a vice presidential running mate.
Oh, I thought that meant like a lodge.
Oh, no.
That's no, it's a person.
The name of a politician from Massachusetts.
And that's just where what we'll have time for. The rest we'll just leave up to people tracking down Don Folsom, grab them the book, agree or disagree, take a look at the footnotes, which are extensive, and you can start your conversation from there. Thank you, Don. Appreciate
Thank
that.
You, Ian. It's been fun. I appreciate your having me on.
Well, great. Thank you so much. And how's the book selling, by the way?
Well, you know, it's only been out since the 31st of January, so I don't think they have a good grip on sales. I went over to DuPont Circle bookstore the other day near me in Washington. I'm about a mile from the White House right now in my apartment. This bookstore said they had 18 one day, and they were down to one the next. So maybe... Okay. That's a good sign, or maybe it was just
Washington. Well, I wish you that success, down from 18 to 1 in every bookstore in the country. And thank you. It's interesting and a great conversation starter. And we'll keep tracking both the confirmation and the pushback on your book, Nixon's Darkest Secrets. And to Christy Peel, who was on earlier, and to all of our guests tonight on Coast to Coast, thank you so much. And we'll see you in a month. Continued success for George Norrie and, of course, John B. Wells, who took over on Saturday nights. In the meantime, Deus te amat, and I do too.